Welcome to the coffee break. It's the, what is today? The 28th of, no, the 29th of April, 2020. I got to remember to start checking that beforehand. Hi, everybody.
Hello. Hey, Robbie.
Ron, it's great to see that you and Solbu are social distancing and also that you've got him nicely trained to make you a sandwich. Oh, boy. I can't wait till Sunday when I'm at the studio and I can be right there with Solbu. Social distancing. Everybody having a good day?
Yes.
Yeah, very good day.
The sun is shining.
Oh, lucky you. It's pouring rain here. But oh, well.
It's pouring rain here as well. I'll be working I'll be working very hard today. I've been managing to get some of my passport sorted out. I had some time, but I had relations come yesterday, and I managed to break the back door, which cost me £90, which wasn't very happy about it. They did come to the back door and broke the back door. So I had to call in the locksmith this morning. We're social distancing, me and the locksmith. To fix the door.
Are you saying someone broke in?
No, I'm saying that my relations came and broke the door yesterday, the back door.
Your relatives did?
Yeah, they came in yesterday. You
know, Why did they break the back door? They could knock, you know that, right?
No. They're Irish, no one's anymore. Oh, man. They're Irish, but they don't know. No, what happened was they loaned it, they did the bowing for me, and they came in. I think they pushed the back door or something and broke the mechanism.
Oh, man. So, yeah. Peter, when once you've got it all fixed, which is going to cost you $100, goodness me.
It'll be £90.
£90.
Yeah.
Then you need to get a little sign on the back door that says, you know, knock, don't break.
Do not push, do not stop.
Yes.
So I got it my fixed.
Mm. Yeah. So greetings to everybody. I see Ron Morissette is waiting for his sandwich. Solbu is there. Two places at once. Hey, Solbu. We got Peter, who y'all know. We've got BP9. Hey, BP9.
Good morning.
And Bo Lichnowsky from Ameridroid. Hi, Bo.
Hello.
It's good to have this little break once a day.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about today?
Well, that's the great thing about a coffee break. There's no set rules. I mean, I could ask BP9 if he's ever seen any alien spacecraft.
Yeah, I saw that.
I have not. Only in a video that I saw.
Would he admit it? Would he admit it?
Sure I would. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now it's okay. Yeah. Go ahead. Tell them, Solbu. Tell them.
Yeah. The Pentagon has, in 2017, some videos appeared of the U.S. Air Force following a flying object that they... no one knows what it is. The Pentagon has
Solbu. If nobody knows what the flying object is, then it must be an unidentified flying object.
Yeah, and it was flying at speeds that no human aircraft ever can produce. So the Pentagon has officially acknowledged that yes, they have tracked a few UFOs. So. That's exciting.
Dun, dun. No word yet whether or not it was piloted by aliens.
I like green.
So Robbie, is that going in your news?
It'll be in the news today. Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Okay.
Of course. Can't not mention something like that.
I have to check the post-processed show from last week because somehow, somewhere, you put a tin hat on.
That's just the thumbnail for that news story.
Oh,
yeah, because
okay.
you submitted that news story about about aliens. SETI at home.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
so
yes.
The thumbnail is Jeff with a tin hat and he's in a padded room, and it says over his shoulder, "What now?"
Oh boy. Oh boy. I don't know whether you've noticed, but he's got very, very red hair. You noticed that?
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that.
He's very ginger.
He is very ginger.
I was very ginger one time.
I hope that's politically correct. I'm sorry if it's not. Sorry.
I had a beautiful head of dark hair at one point in my life.
I saw the picture on the thing. I saw the picture of you.
Guess it just goes to show that once it's posted on the internet, you can never get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's probably some pictures out there with me with hair. Although, I'll tell you, when I was a teenager, so 14, 15, 16,
mm-hmm.
I had long hair. Gorgeous hair.
But did it grow from the top of your head, or did it do like Jean-Luc Picard?
Oh yeah, no, I didn't
grow from the back.
I didn't bald until, strangely, after I was married.
Oh,
I was, I was thinning by then. So by about 2000, my head was starting to thin, and then it just stopped altogether.
No garbage.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I've been reading up. I did a mail run. My pine time has not arrived yet.
Unfortunate.
Well, you know, I thought, you know, well, it wouldn't hurt to look, right, to see if it shows up. But
the question is, who's going to unbox it first? Either BP9 mm-hmm. on Coffee Break or Robbie on Category mm-hmm. 5. It's a race.
Probably. Well, Robbie, you're a TV personality. You get stuff sooner than I do anyway, so.
No, I had to order it.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well,
I ordered it just like everyone else, and I ordered it after you, so.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I was reading up on the documentation. I'm not sure, I forget who I was talking, who I was discussing the real-time clock with, whether it was yesterday or a few days ago. And I have to go back and look at the documentation on the website, because the implication on the website was that the real-time clock portion or the ticking portion was a separate device on the, you know, that was installed on the circuit board. But I don't see it when I looked at the documentation for the CPU itself. It looks like it's built into the CPU. Mm-hmm. And that kind of makes sense, because even with the thing in standby mode, there still has to be some sort of a ticker, some sort of a crystal going on that keeps it alive. Otherwise, it can't respond to any kind of stimulus, like, you know, accelerometer interrupt or anything like that.
How different would our world be if, when our watches fell asleep, time stopped? We could get so much done.
It'd be nice.
Solbu could finally make that stupid sandwich.
Yeah. I don't like to have BP9, but my wife got a clock yesterday. And
It arrived, eh?
Yeah, we got it.
Good.
But you put it on and it going round and round up very fast to find the right time. Then it stops and got an hour before, because it didn't understand British summer time. She left it and she said, you know, fix it. I said, I will do. Look at it again. I'll read the instructions again. And she did. I did that. The thing corrected itself. So it's on the good clock. So it's really pretty summertime now.
So, Peter, is the whole island of the UK, including Ireland and Wales? I think Ireland's literally a separate island, isn't it? Are you on the same time zone as the main part of England?
Is
that true?
Yeah, great.
So when you're on summertime, you are not at GMT. You're at GMT plus one. Is that true?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, got it. All right, thank you.
And the thing is transmitted from a place in Northumbria. The John Michael clocks in Northumbria, the transmitter is 100 kilohertz, it runs on. not very bright, yeah, not awake. So, but she was quite shocked, I think, corrected itself. She couldn't understand. She thought, well, I corrected it. But it works all right.
The atomic clock doesn't care about summertime or anything like that. It just keeps it just keeps ticking that same signal out, regardless of what summertime or whatever we're doing.
It's a cesium atom that drives vibration at a very particular frequency, and then divide it down, and then use it to send voltage out. It uses a cesium moment, electron event.
Do you remember what frequency that atomic clock radio station transmits at, or no?
I think it's 100,000 kilocycles. I'm not sure. I could find out for you.
I'm just wondering if my shortwave receiver could pick it up.
You wouldn't get it. There are ones in America. There are ones in the USA.
I see. Okay.
I'll find out if you want to find out. I'll go for remind myself of it.
I can Google it just as easily. I just thought you might have the answer just off the top of your head since you live in the area.
Yeah, a quick question. If you install, can you use a batch of strip to install that game onto Linux? Do you have to, can you just use a zip file and tip it into the right directory and there they go? Would that work, or do you have to do things like Windows?
It does depend on, if I understand correctly, you're asking if you provided a binary of your program,
a zip
whether file. I'd be able to just run it directly on the Linux box.
No. I got a zip file with a batch script, and the batch script will unzip the file and just put it in the right place.
So all the bash script does is just automate the process of what you would normally type on the keyboard, right? I could as easily type in each of those commands that are inside the bash script manually if I felt like doing that, and it would do exactly the same. The question becomes whether I have all the libraries on my machine that you require, that your program requires. That's really the constraint.
That's where I would be going for more like a deb pack, which will include dependencies. So your deb pack it's similar. It's like a script that will put the files in the right places, but it will also make sure that the user has the correct dependencies installed. And if they don't, it will install them.
Well, if you build a Debian package, you have to make sure that any file name that you use is unique from any other package in the whole wide world.
Yeah, you don't want to overwrite stuff.
Otherwise, you'll stomp on someone else's program, and you don't want to do that.
That would be naughty.
Yes, it would.
How would you create a dev pack?
You're going to have to Google that one. I've never done it. You're going to have to Google that one.
I have you, but I don't know how to tell you, Peter. Google is the best place. I have some information in like one of my repositories. I think NEMS admin has it, but.
Mm-hmm.
Tell you.
Like RPM packaging, where we edit one text file in Debian packaging, there are several text files. There's a whole folder of files you need to.
But it's the same concept, though, right? So,
yeah. You can convert between.
Use Red Hat. You use RPMs for Red Hat based devices, distributions, and Debian packages for Debian based distributions like Ubuntu.
That'd be a good question to send into the show, I guess.
That'd
be another. That'd be. We'll have
that'd
a Peter
series.
we'll have a Peter series. So far, we've got GitHub on the roadmap.
I just saw that.
Now we're going to add creation of deb packs.
I'm going to have to subscribe to your calendar, Robbie, because there's some good stuff coming up.
Category5.tv/subscribe. My iCal is right there.
All right, perfect.
In Magea, we had last year someone joined and wanted to start doing packaging. And he, when we chatted with him, he said that he came from Debian because he was tired of all the problems of creating a Debian package. He was a Debian packager who gave up on Debian packaging because of all the different files you have to be aware of. So he came to us to be very, he only have to edit one file. So
I couldn't get it to install INO installer to write the installer for it because it just wouldn't support it for some reason. I just gave up, so that's why I started to work the other way of doing it, you know. I look into Deathbacks anyway sometime.
Mm. I don't know what an INO file is. That's new to me.
It's a package producer, so you can install packages onto systems. It's called INO, and it's the name of the package, and it's on Windows and Debian supposed to be, and you could, it's just like a script file, and you can install things onto systems.
Okay, I've not heard of it.
I never used it.
First I've heard of that. So
yeah, look it up.
BP9, that was like a Peter response of you'll have to Google it, BP9.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Whenever I get to the point where I need to create a Debian package, I'll absolutely do that. I'm just not to that point because, you know, I just stick my source up on GitHub and say, there you are, have at it. Good luck with that.
Go for it. Go for it. I'm battling right now.
That is the proper solution if you want your program to be in various distributions. Put it online. Put the source online somewhere.
That's so it.
They can fetch it.
And that's why I'm looking forward to this GitHub feature.
So yeah, they can build it themselves and then they can create the packages based on what they've built, right? So
BP9, what do you use for, like, I'm going to be featuring GitHub on the show. What do you use to host your own Git repositories?
Literally a service, a directory on my main machine. It's the serve directory, the SRV directory?
Yeah.
Well, normally you would have serve www or serve http or something like that. Well, I have a serve.git. And then I create all my Git repositories under that directory. Now, I could easily
just using the Git command?
Sure, yeah, Git clone.
Yeah, okay.
Git
but
clone
on a
bear.
Local. Git clone bear.
Yeah,
and that's
git clone -- bear. Well, so what you do is you create your Git repo inside your normal project directory, just like you normally would, right?
Right.
And when
right.
you do that, you end up with a .git directory inside your project, right?
But how do you push and pull from your network?
That's what I'm getting to. But that's what I'm getting to, right? So then you can do from your project directory, once you've done some check-ins, so you're not building an empty repo, you can then do git space clone space -- bare space dot, meaning current directory, space, in my case, /srv/git/, and then whatever the name of the project is, .git. So what that will do is it will take the current repository that's in my local directory, and it will create a bare repository in the /serve/git directory. And it's there now, right? Now, I've got SSH enabled on all of my machines. The only way to get to the main machine, even from any other machine in my own private network, is SSH. I don't do Telnet. I don't enable any other services like that.
Yeah.
So because I've got SSH already enabled, it's trivial at that point. You can literally go to my laptop at that point, or I can go
access
to the laptop.
From anywhere,
Git space clone space, and then the name of my main machine, colon/srv/git/, then the name of the repo, .git, and then it just clones to the laptop, and I build.
So 100% kind of CLI.
It's all command line. It's all command line.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, I could as easily go off and install GitLab on the main machine and access it all through GitLab, but I'd be doing pull requests to myself. There's no point in doing any of that.
Yeah.
For documentation, I keep a docs directory inside the project, and all my documentation is in Markdown files. I do not putting the documentation separate with the project, like with GitLab. They let you create a wiki, right? But now that's separate from the application. I would rather keep the documentation in. By the way, I also create Doxygen, Java doc type comments in all of my code. And I can run Doxygen, and I'll typically generate that to my project folder /docs/generated. And then all of the project generated documentation, Doxygen stuff, all goes into that directory. I don't typically check that in because you can build it with just a Makespace doc. Mm-hmm. But
I imagine you use SSH keys in order to do that.
Of course. Absolutely. Yeah. No passwords here. I do private public key. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know what I love about your Git scenario?
And I'm sorry, but I also use a different port number to what the default port number is.
Because security through obscurity is the best kind of security.
No, that's not it. I have, when I had a different provider for the internet, I did pass through port 22 from outside of the internet into the main machine in order to allow me to, when I go to Australia, I can still check in on my repositories. Sure. I can still do my work and check the code in. Literally within seconds of opening up the port, I'm getting whacked.
People are whacking me
with all kinds of common names.
And of course, people don't realize. I realize. Yeah, yeah.
And the hackers,
but an end user who like connects a new device to the network and just opens it up.
They don't think of stuff like that.
So what I do is on my server, so I'll open port 22, but then on the server I've got CSF LFD running and it's monitoring SSH for attempted logins. And if there's one failed login, boom, IP address is blocked. Done.
For how long?
Permanent.
Okay, so if you forget your password
if you accidentally fail to log in,
How would I do that with my keys?
Good point. Yep. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Right.
I'll accept
because
that.
as soon as you open that port, boom, you're getting whacked away from every country overseas, and boom,
sure,
they're gonna guess your password.
I failed to ban in order to do the same.
I found that when I moved that port number, way up in the address range, the hackers didn't even know it was there because they typically only scan the first 1,024 ports because they're the reserved ports, the well-known ports.
Yeah, and some only scan for the port 22 because they are looking for SSH servers and anything else they are not interested in.
True enough.
I've had a bug in Lazarus yesterday. You have a component which you could put on the screen to give you an input onto the box with an input on. And then there's an option you can make it numbers only, but it doesn't work. It works in Windows, but it doesn't work in Ubuntu. Same.
We got to get this guy on GitHub so he can ask for help with his code.
And back to
the GitHub. What's up here?
GitHub. Sorry.
We're gonna get you hooked up with that soon so that you can post these kinds of questions. BP9, what I love about your setup with the local CLI based Git is that I was actually thinking about it yesterday because remember I said how I found out that Vimeo has an API. So I coded it into my system and it was brilliant. Yesterday when I added the coffee break, I was just typing the description. That's how far I had gotten in, and boom, the API, which is running on a cron job every 5 minutes, already pre-populated all the video files. So, nice. Like, I watched, I saw it happen before my eyes, and it saved me about 10 minutes off of my my to do.
I don't understand. There was actually a problem in actual Lazarus itself, the internal
I'm not going to get to tell you, BP9.
That's okay. No problem.
The thought that hit my mind, though, is that I can't push a Git clone of my website to GitHub because of privacy reasons. Sure. I can't.
Oh, okay. No. Well,
I wouldn't.
Yeah, GitHub, I think, are trying to convince us all to host our websites from there. I'm not sure I want to do that.
No, not happening. But talking about my infrastructure, my internal infrastructure, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
So my site is a full aggregation service, right? So that's never going to find its way onto a public place.
One thing I would say about command line Git. One of the tools that I like a lot, and it works on both Windows and Linux, so you'll be happy to hear that, is Git-K. I think it may be a separate package on your distribution that you have to install, but I highly, highly recommend it. It gives you a great visual a representation of what the repo looks like, and very, very clearly describes what branch you're on.
That's cool.
And it's very clear.
All kinds of stuff we can get into.
Go back in history.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. There is all. I'll look at that. There is all kinds of stuff we could get into, but I highly recommend Git-K. That is, as I say, typically a separate program that you've got to install.
I've only ever used Git, but I'm used to that. But the thought of being able to Git clone my site locally to the server, for example, and be able to have a versioning that's not just having to go back in old backups.
Yeah. I do it
and recover
files. I do it a lot for my documents. I have various documents that are all written in Tech or LaTeX. It is a text-based a document formatting language. It's
sorry,
all version,
Peter,
right?
You goofball.
It's all sorry. It's all version.
Peter's calling me a silly Git.
Oh, good. Okay. So
silly bald Git.
My point, though, is that it's all easily version controlled, and as is the whole. And I routinely create the bare repository on the server so that I can check it out anywhere. And it's a wonderful way to manage any text-based resource. You can you can put binary files in there, but it won't effectively.
Yeah,
sort
it won't
of
version
them.
It quite the same. One thing that I
recommend people do who are using Git for doing easy backups is have the Etsy directory in Git. There's a package that I install on all my systems. It's got Etsy Keeper. And it keeps the Etsy folder as a Git repository. And I always I cloned those to one of my systems so that I can have a backup.
But do you want that Etsy directory to look the same from your desktop to your laptop, to your Pine,
But I use it in on one of the big servers I have. It has saved us from reinstalling if you have to reinstall the server because of, it crashes and it is beyond repair, we have a local copy of the Etsy directory, and then we can just copy the Apache directory and the SSH keys.
And just so you know, you can do this with CVS as well as Git. I mean,
we're going to have to pick it up tomorrow, guys.
That's fine.
I hate having to cut off a great conversation.
I know. We're having a great time.
We got to call it quits. Have a great afternoon, everyone. Thanks, BP9, for all the info. It's great
stuff.
You're
welcome. No problem
at all. See you guys. Take care.
Bye.
Take care.